Okay, so I'm going to introduce Scott Henderson, who's an associate professor in the Department of Communication, Popular Culture, and Film at Brock University. He received his MA and PhD in Film Studies from the University of East Anglia, and his research focuses on issues of identity and representation in popular culture. His current research is focused on issues of identity and immediacy in the neoliberalist era, as well as on the changing nature of music scenes through an examination of the scene in Saint-Étienne, France. So, are you all...
I think I'm all set. I mean, okay. If people were hoping for Devo based on the title, I'm apologizing. And if you're expecting the band Saint-Étienne, it's the city I'm talking about. So I'll give you a second if you want. Okay, so the primary focus of my research in Saint-Étienne, France, has been an investigation of the nature of the local music scene. The goals of this research have been twofold. I mean, first, I've wanted to examine the changing nature of local music scenes amid the technological changes that have been impacting the music industry. Despite increased globalization, the local clearly still matters in discussions of music. Understanding how local musicians and other contributors to a local scene interact with global flows of culture, both in terms of how they use culture that comes into Saint-Étienne and also how they employ those flows to promote and enhance their own work, provides an understanding of how researchers of popular music and popular culture might understand the everyday effects of these broader industrial and technological changes. Secondly, this research is also focused on understanding the specific role that music plays within Saint-Étienne itself, particularly in relation to broader cultural industries. The city has struggled as it transitions from one dominated by manufacturing and mining into new economies. The loss of two of the area's largest employers, the local coal mine and French manufacturing and mail order giant Manufrance, has led to a decline in the town's fortunes. The ways in which young people use music as a form of not only local identity construction, and they often actively reflect on the city's industrial past, but also entrepreneurially as a form of job self-creation is significant. The intersections with broader cultural industries, both public and private, such as local community radio, that's the main kind of local community radio station, local venue owners, local and regional government, cultural initiatives, and with other cultural forms such as theater, film, or graffiti, have made Saint-Étienne a valuable case study for understanding these shifting cultural flows in a city that culturally does seem to punch above its weight. So this paper will explore the use of post-industrial spaces as part of the music and cultural scene of Saint-Étienne, France. Of particular interest here is the use of the site of the city's former coal mine as a site of music and cultural performance. The mine houses a museum of coal mining, celebrating the history of the industry within the city, but it's also employed as a music venue, with its outdoor areas housing a stage and smaller acts often performing within various former mining buildings. Coal mining is one part of the lengthy industrial history of the city. Arms, as well as bicycles and ribbon, have represented prominent former industries. While, as I said, French catalog company Manufrance was based in the city. So the loss of industry has obviously had a negative impact. And culture, particularly music, has been a key element in the city's own redefinition. And this paper will also examine the use of other industrial spaces and ways in which musicians are able to cheaply find such space for rehearsals, etc. Right, why the city's post-industrial nature has encouraged a vibrant local music community, scene, industries, however, whichever term we want to insert there. So I want to consider the impact of post-industrialization in relation to the rise of this local scene, with particular focus on how previously industrial locales, such as the coal mine, have been repurposed in ways that create a connection to the city's past and its identity. And much of the analysis here is based on interviews with musicians and their comments on their relationship with the city's past. Includes issues related to genres such as punk, hip-hop, and industrial metal. And it interestingly follows, I think, from Alan's question about this kind of homology, that a lot of these artists are picking up on genres that they perceive as having represented sort of what Mimi was describing. So it's interesting how, well, we might question, as Alan was, the direct homology, certainly as they get picked up and used, employed by others, I think that really retains those meanings. So they sort of suggest these as defining and representing a working class and post-industrial ethos. Undoubtedly, there's been substantial change in the ways in which music is disseminated and consumed. Yet, music remains an activity that is very closely linked to local culture, even in an era of globalization. On one hand, music practices have been perceived as a means of articulating individual and group identity in relation to the wider global forms of culture. Secondly, and more significantly for my concerns here, the local still remains the source for most music, even when it does end up circulating through more global channels. So whether we're addressing specific geographic locality or aspects of online scenes, these community circuits in which music is exchanged, discussed, produced, and consumed are significant. Much of the anxiety around the decline of popular music, as we keep hearing, has been focused on what might be considered the traditional mainstream music industry. In fact, as John Williamson and Martin Clunan have argued, the term music industry is a misleading one, as it has traditionally been a stand-in for the recording industry. And that the term music industries is more accurate, as it acknowledges the diverse sectors of music, including publishing, live performance, promotion, and so many more. In regards to France, music plays a significant role within French popular culture. Hugh Dauncey notes a 1996 survey that revealed that music is a more important leisure pastime for the French than sport, television, travel, cinema, or theater going. As Dauncey stresses, musical consumption of all kinds is thus unarguably a fundamental aspect of the everyday life of French people. What is striking is that Dauncey notes that much of this consumption relates to popular music, variété, and rock and pop. Dauncey makes note of Mario D'Angelo's examination of the French music industries and their vulnerability in relation to current developments, where he suggests that French culture remains understood as exceptional, with tradition setting it apart from the rest of the globalized world. Yet, such exceptionality, particularly in an era of globalized popular forms, and with little in the way of seeming infrastructure and support for more popular forms, means that French popular music is thus seen as vulnerable. At the same time, D'Angelo and Dauncey do point out that there are manifest strengths of music in France in terms of public interest in it as a leisure activity or government willingness since the 80s to invest in it as an aspect of cultural policy. There's a vibrancy within the Saint-Étienne scene that allows it to engage with the global, but in ways that I found are locally inflected, as well as keeping with some of these notions of French culture. Arguably, this inflection comes from precisely the local strengths that need investigating. It answers some of D'Angelo's concerns, as rather than needing a strong industrial sector in a more traditional sense of a music industry, what is needed is a strong local culture to enable traditions that perhaps retain a degree of French exceptionalism, if indeed this is necessary. In this case, I'm less interested in aspects of French identity through musical practice than I am interested in the ongoing role of local music scenes and culture and their contribution to these wider music industries, even though notably local identity remains significant. And that in itself may reflect the ultimately local nature of most music making and consumption practices. They happen somewhere, and that somewhere maybe needs to be thought of and identified. So to this end, a few years ago, I began to analyze the music practices within Saint-Étienne, France. Right? It's a city of roughly 180,000 inhabitants, located in eastern central France, and it's about, and importantly, about 40 miles southwest, or 64 kilometers southwest of Lyon. I was attracted by the apparent vibrancy of the scene in a city of such relatively small size. My focus has been primarily on the independent sector. Although, as might be anticipated in a city of such size, there is interplay between the smaller bands and those that have managed some degree of national or even international success. And among the most successful bands from Saint-Étienne are dubstep reggae pioneers Dub Inc., folk rock act Mickey 3D, and hip-hop artists MC Pompile and Caniche Crew. And I'll come back to those two in a minute. Despite its size, Saint-Étienne has managed to develop a meaningful local music scene, one that's also forged connections with other local music scenes in France and elsewhere to some extent. Much of this has been down to the success of touring bands and of local festivals which strive to bring in various international artists. As Jerome Guibert has noted for French music scenes, he says, if local audiences identify themselves with such a collective, and if nationally media and audiences establish a link between place of origin and music style, a local scene becomes identifiable. In the case of Saint-Étienne, it might be argued that the local style is itself this sort of innovative polyglot, where bands readily incorporate multiple influences. The main band I look at, Angela Hidden Tracks, has elements of indie pop, punk, hip-hop, jazz, blues. I mean, they draw from so many genres and styles. Where bands and audiences are receptive to a wide range of musical styles, such that during one of my interview visits, I went to a night of Eastern European industrial music, and then I visited a cafe that had a rap open mic, and as I looked around, most of the same audience had also migrated to this place. So there wasn't this kind of genreification in a way in the city. It was really people were involved in music and followed all kinds of musics. Further to Guibert's point, he suggests that there are, however, two factors which are critical for the crystallization of a local music scene. He says it's first necessary for musicians themselves to emphasize their regional origins, which is rarely done in France, and secondly, he says it's necessary for the local or regional authorities representing the geographical area to make use of the image created by the music scene to favor the local economy by using it in tourism policy, for example, which is also rarely done in France in the contemporary music sector, although he suggests in England this type of opportunity is already widely seized upon. And Saint-Étienne's local authorities, as I'll get into, are very keen on making use of the local music scene. And so each of these is notable for Saint-Étienne. Right, the latter already identified in the significant role that music and cultural events play locally, and how they are actively promoted and strongly supported at various levels of government. My own interview suggests Guibert's first point, as Stéphanois musicians and others involved in the local music scene are very self-conscious and self-aware of their origins. That may be in the nature of Saint-Étienne in relation to its economic struggles and also its strong sense of local culture in consciously defining itself as distinct from its near neighbor Lyon. Local musician Letitia Fournier, who goes by the stage name Raymond Howard, right, and who, like so many other Stéphanois musicians, performs in a multitude of bands. You know, most of these people play in each other's bands and play in different genres, but she's underlined this notion. She says, I've been to many places in France, but you don't feel the same spirit as in Saint-Étienne because people are not so involved or they have the broad range of music available every night. So she's comparing it to places like Lyon, where, I mean, if you were a hip-hop fan, you could go to a different hip-hop show each night. If you're a jazz fan, you go to jazz. If you're a music fan in Saint-Étienne, you don't have that kind of stratification. If you want to go to music, you go to whatever is available, she's saying here. Right? She says, so you don't feel a community spirit in these other places. I mean, it's more like you go to a punk show or you go to a hip-hop show. Metz, she was comparing it to another coal mining city, and Saint-Étienne are places where it used to be coal mine work. So people are from poor backgrounds, and they have their grandparents involved in this community, background and links. They go out every night with the same friends. Maybe that's a sort of inheritance from this popular background. The people still convey in what they are doing, even if it's artistic work and not industrial work. These regional origins can also be seen a bit more ironically in two of the Saint-Étienne acts to enjoy some level of success on a national level in France. Right? They've been ones willing to play off of existing stereotypes of working class Stéphanois culture. In the case of MC Pompil, has been a satirical portrait of his persona as a football-mad, tracksuit-wearing hip-hop fan. So this is Saint-Étienne's team colors, right? And Saint-Étienne, they actually hold the record for the most league titles in France. And, you know, their fans are quite notorious, and the team is one of the kind of emblematic aspects of the city. So MC Pompil goes around in this tracksuit as this overabundant fan. And he also makes, you know, use of local accent and speech patterns. Another local act, one that actually formed at high school, is a group of friends who were interested in hip-hop culture and kind of bound together, but also worked as a graffiti crew, or a caniche crew. I mean, KNX, which could be Connex, but also is caniche, so a giant poodle is their emblem. So they play off of this kind of name. They've used tagging as a form of local self-promotion, so if they have an upcoming show, they tag for rather than put up posters. Right? They also have used their high-energy stage show. There's one figure who kind of runs nonstop on stage throughout the set, and you'll see him in a second. And they have all influences from punk and hip-hop to stand out while touring with other French hip-hop artists. I mean, when I've interviewed them, the Parisian scene, they suggest, and the scene in Marseille have notable success, but it's really hard for provincial artists to break through. So they developed a unique, particularly Saint-Étienne style in order to stand out. So this is, I'll give you a little taste of their video for Le Saint des Enfants Perdus. You'll see some of the industrial images of Saint-Étienne pop in here.
des préfleuries avec une moustache de lait sur les lèvres. On rit. Le charbon à noir, c'est notre capitale. Mais ça l'ennuie par sa beauté banale. En été, la foule se précipite sur les autoroutes pour sortir d'ici les ruses vides. Et les cartes postales de la ville se ternissent. À cause des bas de caisse trop bas, on est panne. Des voitures coincées en équilibre sur les deux dames. En effet, notre classe moyenne XL. Dans le bon goût, le maniement de l'excès. Nos montagnes dégracées, les campagnes désertées, nos rivières polluées, les hivers durent presque une année. Mais si Saint-Denis était un paradis, on pourrait plus se plaindre et on tomberait dans l'ennui. Nos montagnes dégracées, nos campagnes désertées, nos rivières polluées, nos hivers durent presque une année. Mais si Saint-Denis était un paradis, nous passerait nos rêves et notre raison de vie. Galeries
souterraines,
légendaires,
forêts,
où les gens disent.
Not really, I mean, you can see he's in kind of a mining costume here. The ties of the city's labor history evident in the video are made highly evident in the frequent appropriation of industrial spaces as spaces of music practice and performance. The most notable of these is the appropriation of the former coal mine, the presence of which still very much dominates the city. One local band that I will talk about in a minute, Angèle and the Hidden Tracks, describe in their song Final List, they describe this as, I've found a picture of exactly what they're talking about, a pair of tits that look down on my city and proudly claim a constant climbing towards a brown sky. Or is it black? Or black-gray? Of course, the only picture I found is a beautiful blue sky. You know, but you can imagine this kind of industrial landscape he's describing. Right? I mean, he's describing these two hills that sit in the center of town that are old coal slag, right? This is the remnants of the coal mine. So there's the mine head behind here. Performances take place in front of this. There's a big open kind of pit area, and then you've got these two looming slag heaps behind there. Right? In a similar fashion, as I said, the actual mine head is a very visible symbol of and within the city. The now disused mine is the site of a museum of mining, and is also prominently used as part of local festivals. The primary one is an annual festival called Avatarium. It focuses primarily on genres including punk, industrial metal, hip-hop, and electronica. The description here is from their 2009 version, and I'll throw a Google Translate, so apologies to those who are reading in French, that there's the Google Translate version, which it uses all sorts of mining metaphors, right? 10 years under this banner, they started as Mad Company, now it's Avataria. 20 years to dig, always dig up naturally, find ourselves at the foot of the mine, continually looking for ideas, meetings to support cross cultures, generate ideas and discussions, climbing slag to scream. I mean, there's all this kind of mining elements that are incorporated in here. Right? So the mine grounds have also been employed as part of the city's Fête de la Musique celebration, which coincides with the summer solstice. And cities across France hold day-long music festivals that are government-sponsored. In Saint-Étienne last year, it culminated in a concert held on the mine's grounds. Right? Spotlights illuminated the mine head, while on the walls of abandoned mining buildings, loops of film and art projects were projected, while bands and DJs played live.
Please close your eyes and let the man's power...
First, I want to show you what's going on. Okay, and the second is a bit of a hip-hop performance. I'll talk about these people in a sec, but if you...
Un quotidien qui est pas prêt de s'arrêter, à mon avis. Des grottes de Lascaux aux tables de la school. Tu fais sauter des bombes, bah nous, on les secoue. Je m'assieds seul et ma somme au semi. Je vois des poules de garde, des wall guard, mon sommeil. Casquette, passe et basket, mon temple, le graffiti. La drogue, j'ai grandi avec mon temps. Un jeune comme un autre qui se tire la nuit.
I'll give you a picture of Manny France. I know I've got to start racing through stuff now. Thanks. Right. So, I mean, the crowd itself is incredibly diverse. It's drawn from Saint-Étienne and beyond other local cities in the area region, including local politicians who I ran into there, musicians, artists, DJs, a vast range of ages and genre preferences. I mean, the hip-hop show was the end of the night here. Right. It was clearly a social celebration, a community event, as opposed to an event aimed at a singular demographic or taste group. The event allied at any Bourdieu-inspired sense of taste and class, using the mine as a focal point for community coming together. Akin to Letitia, Fournier's claims the city's industrial heritage may also be significant in the ways in which its cultural activities have been organized. Saint-Étienne, in many ways, has been a company town, particularly in relation to the coal mine and to Mani France in its heyday. Right, so as I said, Mani France was this major mail order catalog company. It's, you know, it dominated the city in the same way the mine did. The north part of the city was this giant Mani France complex. Right. Interesting. I mean, they used to organize social events for the workers. So the workers' lives and social activities were tied to their workplace. Right. I'll have to just skip ahead here. So the artist we saw, the graffiti artist in the background and the main rapper in there, he was Petra, who was in Kanish crew, who was in there. And Elle and Peter have been invited by the local regional government to beautify the town with a lot of their work. So this overlooks the mine pit. And they, you know, so they still do illegal stuff, but they're also invited to do stuff on their own. The last point I was going to make was about this space, Grand Lux, because Peter talks about hip hop, and hip hop acts want a great deal of money. And he says, but the older ideal had been punk, and people couch surfed, and they squatted, and musicians weren't in it for the money for their labor, they were in it because they loved it. This was a former squat, it's a disused brewery, but then the government paid money to turn it into an art space called Grand Lux, but it didn't change. And Angela and the Hidden Tracks recorded their last album in this space and kind of made use of the post-industrial in ways that sort of tied the contemporary. I mean, the album was called Now, and it was really about the immediacy and vibrancy of music in Saint-Étienne, and they're very attuned to this. And they shot a series of videos which captured the labor. So I'll end on ending sequence. I'll just play 10 seconds of it just to give you a sense of these concepts of mobile cameras through the space.
I'm us, the new I'm going to. I'm a not use, I'm a. I have some margin, historic
list,
but I don't think I ever wrote about cultures that in some ways were exterior to my. I guess I've always tried to make it easier to tell the story of my youth. Everyday insults, everyday love.
I mean, there's an interesting tie between the kind of labor of music production and the immediacy of this into a final product and the labor that goes on in the city. And these tunnels that they're going into apparently connected the brewery site to the mine site, and they would bring miners beer surreptitiously through the tunnels. So there's a whole interesting network underneath there. But I'll leave it at that. I mean, there was all some stuff about Deleuze and immediacy and our connections, because Angel and the Hidden Tracks MySpace site, when I first discovered them, I mean, their influences listed on MySpace were Gilles Deleuze and Otis Redding. I thought, that's the band for me. So, okay, sorry about that. Yeah.
And it's in terms of the particularity of the scene that you were identifying earlier on, how much of an issue is that? Is there a debate around?
There's not so much of a debate. The way that Mekomotet, who is Angio, they also have pseudonyms as well, but he describes it, he says that English for him is the code of the genres which he is working in. He sees it as a musical code, and he suggests that, you know, most of his audience recognizes it as such, and he tends to think that most of the audience is fluent enough that they can follow how he's using it, but that when he's working in punk and post-punk genres, he feels that he really should be drawing on the language of those genres. Whereas hip-hop has a longer tradition as a kind of spoken word. You know, there's more direct connections to identity and place. I mean, if you look at the history of hip-hop, so it's not surprising it's been picked up in France. The other big argument is that in French popular music, I've argued this elsewhere and looking at some of these rationale, chanson is seen as so intrinsically French, and the lyrics are so heavily analyzed, and so much emphasis is put on the lyrical aspects of the songs, that if you were to sing in French and not be doing hip-hop, which I think is seen as quite distinct, but also where lyrics are very important, you'd be inviting a very different reading by the audience. Then these really become musical codes as opposed to linguistic, even though Angio plays a lot with language. He had one album, Oulipo Saliva, which again, I mean, interesting connection. He borrows French literature's Oulipo movement, which is about working with restrictions, particularly Georges Perec's La Disparition, right? Which, in which Perec writes an entire novel without the letter E. So Angèle wrote an entire album with no E in the lyrics and no E chord in any of the music, and tried to work under these same Oulipo restrictions. So even though he's working in English, he's making these really strong connections to French literature and culture. So there's a kind of, I think, interesting use of it as a code, in a similar way I was saying at this outset, that this use of specific genre codes kind of is getting picked up as well in a way that is homologic, and it's kind of...
It doesn't become a political issue. I'm thinking of there were similar incidents in Quebec, for example. I imagine being debated rather more...
No, that was one of the first things I asked, and no, there was no consideration at all. There's a lot of French bands that will perform in English, and it is really a lot to do with genre. That is how I would sort of suggest it. Argued by them. There are, you know, there are pop bands that do sing in, and just punk bands that sing in French, and ones that sing in mixes. But, you know, Angèle's particular interest. Also, I mean, part of this kind of stuff I was talking about with local scenes. I mean, a lot of these musicians who I've been talking to all happen to have worked as translators, and they've all studied in England. And so a lot of their musical, they picked up a lot of their musical influences. And the way I discovered the entire scene was work I was doing on Glasgow, Scotland, and Chemical Underground Records. Angèle and the Hidden Tracks, Oulipo Saliva was released by Chemical. That's how I discovered it. Once I found out more and sort of delved. So, I mean, those interesting kinds of global connections are part of a much wider project. But I think there's practical reasons. They studied and they loved English music, but I think there's also cultural reasons, and they found other bridges that connect it to French culture. They're very well received. They get, their reviews are great. Like in rock and stuff like that, reviews, and they get very, very solid response. So.
I'm wondering what brought you to Saint-Étienne? And in particular, I'm interested also in when did the mines close and what is the industry now?
The mines closed mid-90s, I believe. The industry now, not a lot. It really is a quite poor. I mean, there's bits of service industries. The university is still fairly prominent. There's still some of the older manufacturing in the outlying areas, a lot of warehouses, but I think it's become more of a commuter town to Lyon. Lyon has, even in the age of austerity, Lyon has done particularly well as a kind of financial center. And so I think, you know, increasingly for jobs, Saint-Étienne's been pulled in that orbit. And there's always been a real disharmony between those two cities. Saint-Étienne is a socialist hotbed, right? It's been a union town forever, and it's always voted very left and communist, you know, local. I mean, it really is. And Lyon is not. Lyon is quite the opposite in terms of its. So there's always been this, you know, but gradually the jobs are pulling, which I think is maybe part of this, because I think people of Saint-Étienne are really trying to define themselves as Stéphanois. Right, I mean, that's the term for those of Saint-Étienne, knowing that they have to rely so much on Lyon. So there's that kind of, and it extends into soccer. It's interesting how much it plays, how big a part it plays, but that soccer team in Saint-Étienne is a vital part of their identity and their pride. And Lyon's run of titles in the 2000s was just further salt in the wound. It's interesting to be, they're very close, but they're very far apart in a lot of ways. Even though bands will play frequently in Lyon, I mean, you know, there's an abundant audience there. You know, if we're talking music and labor and bands need to make money, there's a city in which there's lots of venues that is, you know, 40 miles up the road. It's pretty enticing. So, welcome.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.